We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It started as a long shot in a crowded market, but became one of the most profitable drugs in history. Lipitor not only redefined cholesterol treatment, but also built a $125 billion empire for Pfizer. But behind the success was a young scientist and a patent that transformed both medicine and the economics of healthcare. This is how Lipitor became more than a drug and rewrote the history of modern medicine. Welcome to the Rx Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Radin Alekhani, and this episode is being released in September 2025. In each episode of the Rx Chronicles podcast, I talk about the story behind the discovery of a pharmaceutical breakthrough and familiarize you with the biography of their founders, from challenges in their lives to the pushing force toward their invention and more, to hopefully acknowledge and enlighten their names in the pharmaceutical galaxy. In this episode, we'll peek back the layers of Lipitor's journey, not just the science that made it a game changer, but the high-stakes battles, strategic gambles, and the genius of Bruce Roth that set it apart in a crowded market. We'll uncover how a single patent fueled one of the most profitable deals in pharmaceutical history and examine what made Lipitor outshine every competitor. All right, from the heart of Ann Arbor, the very place where Lipitor was first discovered, let's buckle up and begin today's journey. The Rx Chronicles podcast, episode 4, Pfizer's Ground Jewel, Bruce Roth. Bruce Roth was born on February 16, 1954, and grew up in Media, Pennsylvania, just south of Philadelphia. His parents both worked for ACME, a local grocery store, where he also worked 20 hours a week during both high school and college. As a kid growing up outside Philadelphia, Bruce Roth would venture into the cold, still air of a winter night to train his telescope on the constellations. He loved the magnitude and scale of the night sky, and he had a knack for peeking out even the toughest to find stars. He knew that he wanted to be an astronomer. Although his initial professional ambition was astronomy, a high school chemistry teacher steered his career aspirations toward chemistry. In 1972, he went to St. Joseph's College, a Jesuit school in Philadelphia. Roth, the first in his family to graduate from college, obtained his bachelor's degree in chemistry in 1976. During his college years, Roth carried out undergraduate research with Professor George Nelson, who encouraged him to pursue graduate studies in a school in the Midwest, where one could get a decent education. Somewhere he said, "My mentor was from Minnesota, and he told me, go west." I trusted him, so I began looking at schools in the Midwest and landed in the middle of a cornfield in Ames, Iowa. Under Nelson's influence, Roth moved to Iowa State University in Ames, working for a new professor by the name of George Kraus. Before Roth's departure from Philadelphia, the manager at ACME tried very hard to convince him to stay on the grocery store because of his potential to be a store manager. But Roth chose graduate school instead. Kraus, Roth's PhD advisor at Iowa State, had recently finished his PhD with Gilbert Stork at Columbia University. As an assistant professor driven to earn tenure and make a name in the field of organic chemistry, Kraus worked hard and expected the same from his students. He stationed his office in the laboratory and worked shoulder to shoulder with his students. Roth worked just as hard in the laboratory and published 7 papers ranging from synthetic methodology to natural product synthesis in his 5 years at Iowa State. Normally, 1 or 2 publications would suffice for a PhD degree. After earning his PhD in 1981, Roth took a postdoc fellowship position in the laboratories of Andrew Candy, Kraus's mentor for his undergrad research at the University of Rochester in New York. Half a year into his stay in Rochester, one of his neighbors ran into him on a Saturday night, a rare occasion, and commented, "You must live a wild life because you're never home." A wild life, indeed, he was living in the laboratory. In just more than 1 year in Rochester, Roth published with Candy 3 articles in prestigious journals such as Tetrahedron and Journal of the American Chemical Society. His experience in the Candy group would later prove very important in the discovery of Lipitor for his experience in working with pyrroles. In 1982, at the age of 28, when he was offered a job at Parke Davis as a scientist, he knew little about Parke Davis and its parent company, Warner Lambert. The company did not bestow on him the title of senior scientist because he had not completed the usual 2-year stint like most postdoctoral fellows hired by Parke Davis at the time. Therefore, before the age of 30, Bruce moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan for a scientist position at Warner Lambert's Parke Davis Pharmaceutical Research. In April 1982, Roth started at Parke Davis, where he met Michelle Piasecki, a colleague in the PDM, or Pharmacokinetics and Drug Metabolism Department, who had started just a week before him. Having not shaken off his habit of working on the weekends, Roth often spent his Saturdays in the laboratory. One Saturday, Piasecki happened to meet Roth on a visit to the laboratory and began talking. One thing led to another, and they were married in 1984. 3 years later, the whole nation watched in horror as the space shuttle Challenger exploded on January 28, 1987, killing all 7 astronauts on board. The tragedy triggered a life-changing event for Roth. A few months later, thinking of the astronauts and pondering the meaning of life.
"I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here."
He suddenly began to sweat profusely. He was in such a panic that his wife thought there must have been an earthquake. Soon afterward, he asked his wife, Michelle, why she was not afraid to die. she shared her faith with him, and together they began to attend the church in their local community. Roth was transformed from an atheist to a born-again Christian, giving up all his vices, drinking, smoking, and swearing as a testimony to his newfound belief. Coincidentally, a year later, their first child, David, was born, although they had tried to have children without success before then. Two daughters and another son would soon follow: Sarah, Rebecca, and Aaron. In 1986, the chemistry lead for the Statin Project and director of the atherosclerosis section, Milton Hoeffel, retired. Upon Hoeffel's recommendation, the senior vice president of chemistry, John Topless, of the Topless Tree fame, which is a decision tree for medicinal chemists, appointed Roth as a project co-chair for the HMG-CoA project. HMG-CoA, or 3-hydroxy-3-methylglutaryl coenzyme A, is a crucial molecule in various metabolic pathways, particularly in cholesterol and ketone body synthesis. The enzyme HMG-CoA reductase, which is the target of statins, converts HMG-CoA to mevalonic acid, a key step in cholesterol biosynthesis. By then, the statin team in the atherosclerosis section had grown to 18 members. Before Lipitor's launch in February 1997, it had to overcome numerous scientific, strategic, and logistic hurdles. The scary part was that any single one of these roadblocks could have derailed the drug. Roth himself reflected, the number of factors, internal and external, that had to come together for the drug to be a success really boggles the mind. Scientific discoveries do not occur in a historical vacuum, nor do they occur in an intellectual vacuum. The 17th century scientist inventor Isaac Newton commented that the reason why he could see so far was because he stood on the shoulders of giants. The same can be said of modern drug discovery, including the discovery of Lipitor. When Roth's team began their quest for novel statins, they decided to synthesize their own molecules rather than fishing them out of microbial cultures like Merck did. There are two types of statins, actually: natural statins and synthetic statins. The first three statins to reach the market, Mevacor or lovastatin, Zocor or simvastatin, and Pravacor or pravastatin, were all natural products isolated from fermentation broth, although strictly speaking, Zocor is a semi-synthetic statin. In 1981, Merck's Alvin Villard, Gerald Stocker, and their colleagues filed a couple of patents on their synthetic versions of Mevacor. In place of hexahydronaphthalene as the core structure, they substituted a diphenyl group with four substituents. This demonstrated that it was not necessary to have fermentation products to have the activity against HMG-CoA reductase. Villard's diphenyl-based compounds were active both in vitro, or in the test tube, and in vivo, or in the body, indicating that synthetic molecules could replace the natural statins. In a sense, humans could mimic in the laboratory what the microbes did in making statins. Sandoz Pharmaceutical Corporation, which is now part of Novartis, was the first to introduce a synthetic statin to the market. Their fluvastatin sodium, with the trade name Lescol, was truly innovative. Lescol, the fourth statin on the US market, was an example of a fully synthetic molecule that was just as effective as the natural counterpart. It was invented by Faizullah Khetawala at Sandoz in New Jersey in 1984. As I mentioned, natural statins such as Mevacor, Zocor, and Provacol all possess the hexahydronaphthalene core structure. Initially, Khetawala and his colleagues wanted to synthesize the hexahydronaphthalene structure similar to that of mevastatin. However, this core structure has 8 chiral centers, and if one were to make it randomly, as many as 256 isomers could be generated. Just imagine this. If a core structure has 8 chiral centers, it means that the molecule contains 8 carbon atoms that can each bond to 4 different substituents, making each of them stereogenic, capable of existing in either an R or S configuration. With each chiral center being an R or S, in theory, the molecule can have up to 2 raised to the power of 8, which equals 256 stereoisomers. In the end, the chemistry was so challenging that Khetawala decided to give up. Running out of options, Khetawala questioned the importance and the necessity of the complex stereochemistry and subsequent pattern present in mevastatin's hexahydronaphthalene core. He then shifted his attention to identify replacements for the core. Naphthalene was his first logical alternative, followed by indole. To the indole core, Khetawala attached a side chain resembling those found in natural statins. The resulting compound would later become fluvastatin sodium, or Lescol. Unlike mevastatin, Mevacor, Zocor, and Lescol's side chain was a sodium carboxylate salt instead of a lactone ring. The lactone is actually a prodrug because it's converted to the linear ring open form in vivo. In addition, Lescol was more potent than both mevastatin and Mevacor. Depending on the particular assay, Lescol was 22 to 146-fold more potent than mevastatin and 10 to 52-fold more potent than Mevacor. At the time, a symmetric synthesis of the side chain seemed unattainable. So Sandoz decided to make fluvastatin sodium in racemic form, or simply a mixture of 2 isomers, one active and the other less active, which was not as potent as the optically pure drug. All natural statins are optically pure because they consist of only the active isomer. Fortunately, the drug was so much more potent than Mevacor that Sandoz saw no need to increase the potency by another 2-fold by separating the 2 enantiomers. Because of Khetawala's major intellectual input toward the genesis of fluvastatin, he was listed as the sole inventor of fluvastatin in the patents. In addition to being a mixture of 2 enantiomers, fluvastatin had another drawback: the presence of a double bond between the indole core structure and one of the 2 alcohol groups. This type of alcohol, which is known as an allylic alcohol, does not survive well in the acidic environment within one's stomach. Therefore, it's possible that Lescol would decompose to a certain extent in the gut, which may explain its low efficacy in vivo. Interestingly enough, a latecomer, Crestor, or rosuvastatin by AstraZeneca, also possesses the same side chain as that of Lescol with an allylic alcohol. However, Crestor's allylic alcohol is attached not to an indole, but to pyrimidine, which deactivates the allylic alcohol, making it more stable. The indole in Lescol actually activates the allylic alcohol on the side chain, making it more reactive in the gut. While Lipitor and Zocor boasted billions of dollars in sales, Lescol never reached blockbuster status by reaching $1 billion sales level. Because Lescol was the 4th statin on the market, Sandoz intentionally priced it almost 50% lower than other statins. Mevacor, Zocor, and Provocol cost of $70 to $80 for a month's supply, but Leskol was sold for only $40 when it was launched in March 1994. Leskol's annual sales reached its peak at $734 million in 2003. The inventor of Leskol, Ketawala, has since retired from Sandoz in 1994, although he remains quite active in the drug discovery scene, sitting on scientific advisory boards and serving as a scientific consultant to other drug companies. In one of his review articles, Ketawala vividly described the state of competition among all drug firms in the mid-1980s. Since the appearance of American company and Sandoz patents and publications, extensive efforts have followed in many laboratories worldwide with semi-synthetic and total synthetic HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. It is no wonder that in such a feverish pursuit of finding patentable HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, review of patent and published literature presents overlapping activities in the laboratories of competing pharmaceutical research companies. Several other companies were all working on statin projects at the same time. An interesting phenomenon took place among the scientists around the world who were working on statins. They were, of course, competitors, yet each accumulated knowledge that would teach others and fuel others' own creativity and innovation. The success of statins that benefited millions was the success of teamwork, not only within individual project teams, but also among scientists from academia, industry, and the government. Each contributed one way or another to the statin enterprise. The way by which statins were discovered should serve as the model for modern drug discovery. Akira Endo's discovery of mevastatin represented a quantum leap of discovery. However, rarely does the first discovered drug possess all the ideal attributes for that class of drugs. In the case of statins, it took incremental improvements by the drug industry as a whole to arrive at the best-in-class drug, Lipitor. This paradigm worked well for the last century with examples including penicillins, histamine receptor antagonists, ACE inhibitors, and calcium channel blockers. Back to the mid-1980s, the Park Davis team was not prescient enough to know which replacement of the hexahydronaphthalene core structure would be most ideal. They chose mevastatin and Willard's synthetic diphenylstatin as benchmarks and began the journey to find their own statins. The chemistry team decided to replace Willard's diphenyl structure with various heterocycles. Such replacements are known as bioisosters because they could potentially exhibit biologic properties similar to the original chemical structure. In order to substitute Willard's diphenyl structure, Roth recalled the methodology for pyrrole synthesis that he used during his postdoctoral training at Rochester. When later asked why pyrrole was chosen as template, Roth replied, "There wasn't any rational reason for the selection of pyrrole, except that I knew how to make it." As a synthetic chemist, often it's that knowing how to make it to help you select the target. In addition, you want to have the ability to incorporate a wide variety of substituents, which was the case for pyrrole. In retrospect, Pyrrole might not have been the first core structure Roth would have tried if he had known more history of drug discovery. Pyrrole is an electron-rich heterocycle which has a tendency to react with electrophiles in the body, causing toxicities. Upon hearing that Roth was working on pyrroles, John Topless, head of the chemistry department, pulled him aside and commented, "Bruce, you should know that pyrroles do not really make good drugs." Indeed, nowadays, medicinal chemists look at the pyrrole structure with trepidation and avoid it if they can. Being a little stubborn, Roth still pushed it ahead. The team first made dozens of 1, 2, and 5 trisubstituted pyrroles with fluorophenylpyrrole approximating Willard's diphenyl core. In the early 1980s, a cymetric synthesis was still in an embryonic stage, and the technology for controlling chirality was not readily available. Therefore, all the pyrrole compounds were made in racemic form. Within a short time, a team prepared approximately 30 1, 2, and 5 trisubstituted pyrroles. Unfortunately, even the most potent compound that they made in this series was tenfold less potent than mevastatin in the cholesterol synthesis inhibitor assay using rat liver homogenate. Therefore, the project was still quite far from where they wanted it to be. An order of magnitude increase in potency was needed. Just when it seemed that the pyrrole idea was stymied by lack of potency, Roth superimposed his pyrrole compound into Willard's diphenylstatin. This seemingly simple exercise afforded a great insight. Roth's fluorophenylpyrrole was too small to fill most of the space of Willard's substituted fluorodiphenyl core. There was a large region of Willard's compound that was not occupied by the pyrrole compound. In order to fill this region so that the molecule would bind the reductase more tightly, Roth prepared the 3 and 4 dichloropyrrole analog, which was as potent as mevastatin. Shortly thereafter, Mike Wilson, Roth's associate, synthesized the 3 and 4 dibromopyrrole analog, which was also as potent as mevastatin. Now the potency was where the team desired it to be. Wilson had just joined the company after obtaining his master's from Purdue University. Although Roth's dichloro analog and Wilson's dibromo analog were equally potent in vitro, Wilson's dibromo analog was more potent in vivo for reducing cholesterol in animals. After pharmacokinetic studies, the team chose the sodium salt of Wilson's dibromo analog as their lead compound, because it was very bioavailable and very efficacious. They promoted this lead compound to clinical investigation status and coded it CI-957. That was the first real success for the team.
Thank you.
No sooner had the team finished drinking their celebratory champagne than Park Davis's toxicology department discovered that those halogenated pyrroles, including CI957, were subacutely toxic in rats. In fact, at high dose of 600 mg per kilogram, CI957 was lethal to rats. The team had come up with the most potent rat toxin ever discovered. It turned out that such exaggerated pharmacology at high doses was not unique to CI957. This happened to most, if not all, HMG-CoA inhibitors that achieved high plasma and tissue concentrations. The compound was promptly dropped from development like a hot potato. Years later, Wilson mentioned that CI957 was actually not a very stable compound. During its synthesis, the bromine atoms sometimes fall off, and he had to reinstall them at the end of the synthesis. Indeed, using today's standard, it probably would never have advanced to the development stage. But back in mid-1980s, drug discovery was not as sophisticated as it is now. Trial and error was still the primary pathway. You gave the drug to animals and observed the toxicology in escalating doses. If the drug were discovered today, chances are the toxicity would have been detected much earlier using a battery of in vitro assays. The second refrain in Park Davis's quest of statins came in mid-1985, when Bob Sliskovich synthesized a pyrazole analog. Chemically, the core of Sliskovich's pyrazole compound differed from Roth's pyrrole by only one additional nitrogen. Sliskovich's pyrazole analog was as potent as mevastatin in a cholesterol synthesis inhibitor assay using rat liver homogenate. Sliskovich was born in England to a Croatian father and a British mother. Like many of his compatriots, he came to America to carry out his postdoctoral training. In 1984, he was hired by Park Davis as a senior scientist, with Bruce Roth as his supervisor, working on the HMG-CoA reductase project. Initially, along with Roth, Wilson and Sliskovich worked on Roth's idea on pyrroles. After CI957 failed, Sliskovich went off to replace the pyrrole with the pyrazole. Pyrazole is like pyrrole, but with an extra nitrogen sitting right beside the first one, giving the molecule more reactivity. Overall, the team took a shotgun approach, exploring a variety of heterocycles in place of Roth's pyrrole. Eventually, each chemist on the team took on a different heterocycle as the core structure. Roth chose to continue with his pyrrole, and Sliskovich chose pyrazole. After months of work in assembling the core pyrazole structure and attaching the best side chain similar to that of mevastatin, in mid-1985, Sliskovich finally arrived at his very first pyrazole analog prepared in this series. It was as potent as mevastatin and possessed the necessary pharmacologic properties. Meanwhile, Roth replaced the two halogens on the pyrrole core with phenyl and phenylamide. By now, all five available positions of the pyrrole core were fully substituted, with the same side chain as that of Mevacor in the first position. In June 1985, Roth, at the tender age of 31, synthesized the racemic lactone, which would in time lead to the discovery of Lipitor. At that time, Sliskovich's D-pyrazole compound and Roth's racemic lactone were the two front runners to be moved into preclinical toxicology studies. Their compounds had very similar potency and efficacy in vivo. Both had almost the same efficacy in the EH hypercholesterolemia rabbit model. The atherosclerosis team decided to push Sliskovich's D-pyrazole compound toward development because it was of a chemical series different from Roth's pyrroles. The decision to shy away from Roth's Pyrrole series was undoubtedly influenced by the toxicity observed for CI-957. As a result, Sliskovich's D-pyrazole compound became a lead compound in November 1985. In order to further develop the D-pyrazole compound, the team needed large enough quantities of the active pharmaceutical ingredient. That meant that they first had to know how to make it. At that time, it was the originating chemist's responsibility to scale up the synthesis to make 100 grams of the compound. But the chemistry that was originally devised by Sliskovich was not amenable to large-scale production. So the team spent several months modifying the synthesis so they could make enough of the compound for preclinical toxicology studies. Beginning in November 1985, Sliskovich and Wilson prepared the 100 grams of the D-pyrazole compound required for early development. The synthesis involved 9 steps, and at least 2 steps gave multiple products. Meanwhile, the competition did not stand still. Development of HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors was an extremely competitive field, and many drug firms were working on it. In the spring of 1986, while the Park Davis team was still working on their 100-gram lot of the D-pyrazole compound, they learned that the compound was covered by a patent previously issued to a chemist named James Waring of Sandoz Pharmaceuticals in Switzerland. This patent would prevent others, including Park Davis, from using it. Fearing that licensing the patent from Sandoz would be highly unlikely, Park Davis decided to abandon the pyrazole series. This event was a crushing defeat for the team, and they had to regroup and examine their remaining options. After the team decided to drop the D-pyrazole compound, the only remaining option seemed to be Roth's racemic lactone analog. This analog was a more complicated molecule than the primary D-chloro and D-bromo compounds that they had registered earlier. Starting with these D-halogen compounds, Roth first sought to remove the 2 halogen atoms. Unfortunately, the old chemistry did not work to install the requisite substitutions. After retooling the chemistry for the synthesis of fully substituted pyrroles, Roth substituted the 2 halogens with a phenyl and a phenylamide, respectively. By now, all 5 available positions of the pyrrole core were fully substituted, with the first position bearing the same side chain as that of mavacor. Due to the difficulty in synthesis, a total of only 20 analogs were prepared. In June 1985, Roth first synthesized the lactone racemic analog that I mentioned earlier. Again, remember that the racemic form is a 50-50 mix of the more active and less active form. Little did he know then that the more active half would become Lipitor years later. Despite the presence of 50% of the less active compound, the racemic lactone analog was almost as potent as mavacor. The racemic lactone analog passed the first hurdle of in vitro pharmacology after having its potency confirmed in both binding and cholesterol synthesis inhibition assays. The analog lowered cholesterol in the EH rabbit model. Although not significantly more potent in animals than existing statins, the racemic lactone analog did overcome the in vivo pharmacology hurdle that the team needed in order to justify advancing further with this promising new chemical. in September 1986 after the efficacy studies, their racemic lactone analog was brought up for development and designated as a lead compound. The compound was later given clinical investigation number CI-971 in April 1987. For a drug to be successful, the next hurdle is bioavailability. How well the drug survives the stomach, crosses the intestinal wall, and is absorbed into the bloodstream. No matter how potent the drug may be, if it is rapidly metabolized into inactive metabolites, it will not make a good drug. Back in 1985, drug discovery and development were handled quite differently from now. A drug candidate is now tested for its pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics very early in the development process, and the ones that do not pass the hurdles are weeded out early. But at that time in the mid-1980s, pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics was not done until one had a lead compound, such as CI-971. The experiment on bioavailability of CI-971 was performed in Park Davis's PDM department, where Roth's wife, Michelle, worked. When CI-971 was given to dogs in gel capsules, the bioavailability was only 3%. Although the bioavailability was at an acceptable level, actually greater than 35% when it was given in solution. The drug was very difficult to synthesize. Losing 97% bioavailability when given to patients was clearly unacceptable. There were two solutions. One, either reformulate the drug to increase its bioavailability, or two, make the open chain analog as the dehydroxyacid salt. The team pursued both approaches, but the latter one would prove more successful in boosting bioavailability to an acceptable level. Because the open chain analog preparation and reformulation would take about 6 months, the team also decided to develop a chiral synthesis in the interim. After receiving the green light from both pharmacology and PDM, the next step was to assess the drug's safety. The majority of drugs in discovery phase fail because of toxicity. Another large portion of drugs fail for lack of efficacy. Remember that Park Davis's halogenated pyrroles were discontinued because of their subacute toxicity in rats. But this time, Park Davis's Department of Toxicology gave CI-971 a clean bill of health for efficacious doses. Because the statin field was intensely competitive, the Park Davis team was very conscientious in finding advantages of their CI-971 over other statins already on the market. But CI-971 behaved similarly to other statins in terms of its efficacy and safety profile. In addition to not standing out among other marketed drugs, Roth's CI-971 was a racemate containing two enantiomers. The two enantiomers were biologically distinct. One half was the more active compound, and the other half was a less active compound. Initially, the decision was made to bring the racemate CI-971 forward simply because in the mid-1980s, chiral synthesis was still in its infancy and most drugs were developed as racemates if they were not derived from fermentation or from other natural sources. However, it would certainly be better for the patient if the less active molecule was removed so the liver was not burdened by metabolizing something the patient did not need. Sliskovich was assigned the task of separating the racemic CI-971. Because Villard at Merck carried out similar separations of their synthetic diphenyl statins, Sliskovich simply applied Merckx's procedures to CI-971. At first, he treated CI-971 with an optically pure amine, R-positive methylbenzylamine. The reaction gave two diastereomers as two amine salts of both the left-hand acid and the right-hand acid. Diastereomers, unlike enantiomers, are easier to separate, which was exactly what Sliskovich did. After suppression of the two diastereomers, hydrolysis with sodium hydroxide in refluxing ethanol then provided both the left-hand acid and the right-hand acid compounds in optically pure forms. With help from Tim Hurley, an analytical chemist in the department, Sliskovich determined that the active right-hand molecule had a positive optical rotation and the less active left-hand molecule had a negative optical rotation. Later on, the optically pure positive compound containing an open chain acid became PD134298. Since the open chain PD134298 is an acid, making it into a salt would improve both its solubility and physical appearance. As a matter of fact, salt selection is an integral part of drug development. Historically, for acidic drugs, most of the FDA-approved commercially marketed salts, actually more than 60%, are sodium salts. Among the statins, Novartis's Lesco and Bristol-Myers Squibb's Provacol are both sodium salts, as was Bayer's Bakel, now off the market. Potassium salts are the second most frequent for marketed drugs. About 10% of the acidic drugs on the market are potassium salts, and other 10% are calcium salts. AstraZeneca's Crestor is a calcium salt. Zinc, lithium, magnesium, and aluminum salts are all less than 3% in marketed acidic drugs. Overall, for all marketed drugs, there are about 50 types of salts that are sanctioned by the FDA. When Roth prepared the sodium salt of CI-971, unfortunately, it was hygroscopic, absorbing water when exposed to air and becoming a gooey material. The team had to abandon Roth's sodium salt. Potassium salt was also hygroscopic. While Roth worked on monovalent salts, Sliskovich was assigned the task of preparing bivalent salts, including calcium, zinc, and magnesium. After Sliskovich prepared the calcium salt, it was determined to possess better physical properties. It was registered as PD124488-38A. -38A signified that it was the hemicalcium salt. As the project progressed, the hemicalcium salt of the more active enantiomer became the lead compound. In studies performed under carefully controlled conditions with animals, the hemicalcium salt of the more active enantiomer was as potent and efficacious as Mevacor in lowering LDL cholesterol. Because it was a salt of the dehydroxy acid, the solubility and bioavailability were considerably improved. The real bioavailability was higher than the amount of free drug available in blood because many of the metabolites were themselves potent and efficacious HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. After breezing through PDM and safety, PD134298-38A was designated as CI-981. Ready for development in clinical trials. it was later christened with the generic name atorvastatin calcium. With CI-981 in hand, one may think that it would sail through clinical trials smoothly. The reality was far from it. If finding a good drug in discovery was hard, it was even harder for it to reach the market. Indeed, there were numerous occasions where CI-981 or atorvastatin calcium could have failed, coming to rest in the graveyard of drugs that never made it to market. As for the inventor of Lipitor, Roth steadily rose the ranks at Parke Davis. He was promoted to section director of atherosclerosis in 1990, director of atherosclerosis and exploratory chemistry in 1992, and senior director of atherosclerosis and inflammation chemistry in 1993. In 2000, after Pfizer purchased Warner Lambert, he was appointed Vice President of Chemistry in Pfizer Global Research and Development at the Ann Arbor Laboratories, in charge of a department of more than 200 chemists. In the early 1990s, when Roth was initially promoted to a manager, he tried to balance some laboratory work with his managerial responsibilities. One day, he set up a reaction and went to his office to make some phone calls to the biologists. In the middle of his conversation, the acetone cooling bath was ignited and the fire promptly started. That day, his lab mates made him realize that he had become a liability to the team, literally kicking him out of the laboratory. With increasing power came increasing responsibilities. Roth began to focus on developing junior colleagues and creating a suitable environment for them to succeed. His boss, Jim Bristol, praised him as a natural leader. His department became very productive and well-respected. Although no longer working in the laboratory, Roth became a manager who studied failure. In an interview with Fortune magazine in 2003, Roth told the reporter, "Last year we made over 5,000 compounds. Only half a dozen of them will make it to clinical trials. I'm spending a lot of time trying to understand the failures so that we can increase our odds of success." With the popularity of Lipitor, honors deservingly followed. It was bestowed with the 1997 Warner Lambert Chairman's Distinguished Scientific Achievement Award. At the awards ceremony, he gave detailed reminiscences of the discovery and development of Lipitor. In 1999, the lawyers of the New York Intellectual Property Law Association presented their Inventor of the Year award to Roth for his invention of Lipitor. In 2003, Roth had two awards bestowed on him: the American Chemical Society Award for Creative Invention and the Gustavus John Esselen Award for Chemistry and the Public Service. More gratifying to Roth, when he moved about his small town of Plymouth, Michigan, it was not unusual for people to corner him in line at the supermarket or at a dinner party and offer their gratitude. He once mentioned that his happiest moment was when a fellow churchgoer stopped him in the parking lot and thanking him for saving his life. Ironically, in 2001, Roth went to see his physician for a routine checkup, and the blood work data came back, indicating that his LDL cholesterol level was 160 milligram per deciliter. While Akira Endo chose exercise and diet in place of his own invention Mevacor, Roth began taking his own Lipitor at the 10 milligram dose. His LDL cholesterol levels rapidly went down to 100 milligram per deciliter, and at times it was as low as 74 milligrams per deciliter. His favorite story was about Robert Smith, the inventor of Zocor. Smith also takes his own invention Zocor, but his results are not as impressive. In January 2007, when Pfizer announced closure of its Ann Arbor laboratories, Bruce Roth accepted a position as a senior director of small molecule chemistry at Genentech in South San Francisco. A phone call at a Detroit Red Wings hockey game restarted Roth's slow westward march. As he describes, "I was walking up the stairs to my seat in Joe Louis Arena and the phone rang. I was invited to come out to Genentech to interview." Roth joined Genentech as a senior director in 2007, and in 2014, he was appointed senior vice president of the small molecule drug discovery. At Genentech, he led a team that worked with biologists to provide tools and chemistry insight at very early stages of research. He wanted their chemistry teams to be working at the ground level with biologists because he believed it was a cutting-edge approach in the industry. After retiring in 2018, Roth founded his own consulting agency. He is a member of the scientific advisory board for several biopharmaceutical companies and is a senior advisor for Frazier Healthcare Partners. Roth has also received numerous other awards as the inventor of Lipitor, including the 2013 Perkin Medal, the highest award given to industrial chemists in the United States. Roth has also been named an American Chemical Society ACS Hero of Chemistry and has been inducted into the ACS Medicinal Chemistry Division Hall of Fame.
We've always defined ourselves by the ability to overcome the impossible. And we count these moments. These moments when we dared to aim higher, to break barriers, to reach for the stars, to make the unknown known.
Lipitor's journey is a powerful testament to the economic and scientific impact of patents. When it was first approved for marketing by the US FDA in January 1997, Lipitor was a Me Too drug, the fifth entry to the therapeutic class of HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, or statins. Entering this already crowded field alongside Merck's Mevacor and Zocor, Novartis's Lescor, and Bristol-Myers Squibb's Provacol, Lipitor stood out for its claims of superior cholesterol-lowering ability, which, along with a massive marketing campaign, led to its swift and lasting dominance of the statin market, even as other agents became available in generic forms at far lower prices. Indeed, for most of the past decade, Pfizer's promotion of Lipitor has centered on convincing consumers and their physicians that no generic could compare to Lipitor. Initially facing skepticism due to market competition, Lipitor became a blockbuster through strategic marketing under Pfizer, which partnered with Warner-Lambert in 1996. This collaboration marked the start of one of the pharmaceutical industry's most profitable ventures. When Pfizer acquired Warner-Lambert in 2000 for $90 billion, Lipitor was already generating $1 billion annually. Over the next 11 years of patent exclusivity, the drug earned Pfizer a staggering $125 billion, peaking at $13 billion in 2006. With an estimated R&D investment of $2 billion, the return on investment exceeded 6,000%, making Lipitor one of the most lucrative medical innovations ever. Its financial success allowed Pfizer to expand into oncology, vaccines, and other impact areas, further cementing its industry dominance. Lipitor revolutionized the treatment of cardiovascular diseases. Its ability to significantly lower cholesterol helped prevent heart attacks and strokes in millions of patients globally. By now that you're listening to this episode, atorvastatin has saved countless lives, cementing its place in medical history. Even after the patent expired and generics entered the market, atorvastatin remained a widely used medication, further underscoring the enduring value of Lipitor's scientific innovation. Lipitor's patent was a crown jewel for both Warner-Lambert and Pfizer. Beyond its financial returns, the drug reshaped global healthcare by setting new standards for cholesterol management. Lipitor's legacy serves as a beacon of what is possible when science meets visionary business strategy. For anyone questioning the value of a patent, Lipitor stands as proof that innovation can transform industries, save lives, and create fortunes. That's all I had to cover for you in this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. The Rx Chronicles podcast is produced and hosted by me, Radin Alekhani. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to my channel on your preferred podcast platform, like the episodes, and leave a comment for me. This is the biggest support that I can get from you all. With that, stay tuned for the next episode very soon. Until then.
Searching for truths behind the walls, pharmacy dreams in the empty halls, shadow whispers hide the pain that's real, counting down the moments can't escape what I feel, lost in a labyrinth of pills and regrets, chasing false hope but